You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey. My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every week, is Mr. Tristan Riddell. I saw you breaking out the Christmas ornaments earlier today, sir.
That's right. I mean, just moments ago, I just finished my Christmas decorations. The Christmas tree, the wreath, the garland, everything that you can think of. And as on top of that, I broke out the Star Trek Christmas ornaments, which is my favorite part of Christmas.
Mine too. And I did this yesterday. And so it is definitely Trekmas time. We are all on this. I'm sure we are far from the only people out there who have decorated their trees or are decorating them right now. And so I want to put out a little request to everybody. I want everybody to go to the Babel Conference, our Trek FM Facebook group, and post photos of their Trekmas trees, because I want to see how everybody arranges them, because like I have Captain Janeway toward the top, looking over everybody, Seven of Nine, and the Delta Flyer, and then Voyager, the Doctor, and then I've got a few more. I've got Data, and then, you know, a couple others, Captain Kirk and whatnot. So I'm just wondering, I mean, do we all have like little patterns of how we do this?
It is completely random for me. Like, I don't have a specific spot. I mean, the only person that I have a specific spot for is Sisko, and he is front and center every single year because he's one of my favorite Star Trek ornaments because he's holding a baseball behind his back.
Nice. That's cool. I do not have the Sisko, unfortunately. That's one that I have missed over the years.
Now, I don't have the Delta Flyer because I forgot that they made the Delta Flyer, because I have the Doc, I have Janeway, I have Seven of Nine, and I have Voyager. Mm-hmm. And I think those, besides the Delta Flyer, I think those are the only Voyager ornaments that they've made.
To my knowledge, yes.
I do have a Borg cube, so you could say that Voyager kind of procured the Borg that way.
It inherited the Borg cube. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. I don't have that one either. I think I'm missing a lot of TNG era ornaments. I've got a Klingon Bird of Prey. I've got Data. That's it from TNG, really? I've got to go back and reevaluate this whole thing now. Oh, my God.
I think I have mainly TNG.
But anyway. Yeah. This is what we're really talking about for our 100th episode, because yes, you heard that right. It's the 100th episode. I'm afraid we're not going to have like some massive celebration, or we're not going to have tons of guests coming on or anything like that. We kind of wanted to just do something fun, but quietly, just like how we started. just getting together and enjoying ourselves and having some fun, and hope you do too. And so we're going to do a commentary of Timeless.
Now, a lot of you actually chimed in, because when I asked you a couple weeks ago about what we should do for a 100th episode, I completely forgot that we already had this on the books months ago.
And, yes.
But the thing is, some of you actually said, hey, you should do a commentary on the 100th episode. And so it kind of synced up very nice. And so I cannot remember exactly who you people are or were. So please forgive me, but thank you from the TTJ crew for suggesting that.
Yeah, definitely. And we've actually had people suggesting this to us since maybe even episode 50. The first person I have written down, and countless others have come afterward, Lark Baum suggested this a long, long time ago. I count him as the first. And so, Lark, if you're out there listening, thank you. And we hope that we fulfill your request.
All right, and as you know, what we always do with commentaries is that we do a countdown, 3, 2, 1, click play. So cue up your Netflix, cue up your DVD, or however you obtain these episodes. But as Char said, we're doing episode 6 from season 5, and how Netflix describes it is, a miscalculation by Ensign Kim causes a fatal crash during Voyager's first test with slipstream travel. Ain't that the truth for Ensign Kim?
It's just a hard knock life for Ensign Kim, isn't it?
It's just, it sucks to be him sometimes. All right, so folks, we're going to do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, play. Boom.
All right, here Straight we up. Go. Hey, it's Fargo. Sadly, it's starting to look a little bit like this. In Fargo, for those who've never been in the very high north region of the U.S., or really anywhere in the world, when snow starts falling and it starts to get really cold out, it's just going to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. It doesn't ever really melt and go away. It just kind of wears out after a while.
So I'm glad that you can connect with this episode on a very personal level.
All too well, man. All too well. In fact, I'm having some traumatic flashbacks from last winter right now because I wear a coat much like what these folks are wearing right here, minus the tricorder, although I kind of wish I had that.
Their jackets and pants kind of look like leftover Jiffy Pop poppers.
They kind of do. They're really silverish and space agey. Like, oh, hey, these came from space. It's that sort of thing. But it's a little too cold for popping popcorn. Sorry.
One thing that I always love about Star Trek uniforms, the variation of uniforms, like when they go on away missions or they're working out, or like they have cave diving costumes, and they have winter costumes, and they have sand costumes, and everything like that, everything that you could possibly imagine, and on with every single iteration, they have room for like the stripe of red or the stripe of blue or the stripe of gold.
Of course. Now, you know one thing I cannot wait for when we get the Blu-rays is this visual right here of Voyager under the ice. Yeah. Imagine how good that's going to look when it's really sharp.
That slow pull of the 74656 right underneath. Oh, it's going to look
cool. Oh, I know.
I mean, it looks amazing now, even in standard definition and with the tools that they used back then. But even today, I just can't even imagine with that enhanced what it would look like.
Just imagine how much better it's going to look. It's going to be fantastic. And one thing, you just mentioned it, the effects of this episode, so top-notch. Major kudos to whoever did them back in 1998 when this episode aired, because I still think they hold up.
I'm glad that you mentioned it, because I couldn't remember the exact date. And so, 98.
1998?
That's a long time ago.
I was a junior in high school.
I don't even know what I was.
Were you at least an adolescent by then?
I was 14.
Okay.
I was 14. I was 12.
You're 12. Okay.
I can't do simple math.
Well, you know, math is hard. Numbering, it's sequencing them. No. Isn't that what a tricorder's for?
I was just wouldn't that be hysterical? Like, if the tricorder didn't have a calculator, because they just assumed that if you possessed a tricorder, you could at least do basic math.
How foolish! No.
I saw this. I saw this cartoon. It was a one panel cartoon, and it was Spock and Kirk, in present day U.S. or whatever town, and they had their communicators out, and this swarm of people came around them. They're like, "Oh my God, what is that? It's a communicator. Does all it do is make calls? That's adorable."
Which is exactly how we think of it now.
Yeah.
Like, there's no apps on it. What do you do with it? We have to acknowledge LeVar Burton. Not only is he in the episode, he directed it.
That's right. I forgot about this. Yeah, this is probably my favorite Burton-directed episode.
Probably mine, too. Certainly a Voyager.
It's an older Harry and Chakotay.
Oh, my God. They're peppered. Again.
I was just about to say that. The peppered XO makes an appearance yet again.
And peppered Harry makes an appearance for the first time, right? First time?
Yes, first
okay.
time.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess he doesn't go gray again until Endgame.
That's right.
Yeah.
This has got to be super creepy for them, because they're literally walking amongst the dead, mm-hmm. and their old fallen comrades frozen, and, you know, like, still looking exactly how they looked when they died, except for, you know, frozen.
Right, but
they
preserved.
Take it rather well, you know, in my opinion. You know, they walk through and they're just kind of like, oh yeah, no, it's just dead Seven. You know, it's just dead Janeway.
Yeah, no, I think I get more chills seeing them walk through it than they actually do. Like, I kind of wonder, did they prepare for this somehow, some training, so that psychologically they could go about doing what they needed to do instead of being affected by what they knew, I guess, was going to be waiting for them here? I don't know. How do you prepare for something like this? Because
yeah.
Like, I don't know. Even seeing the bridge like this just kind of makes me, oh, man.
It's kind of like when I saw the trailer for Star Trek Generations and you saw the saucer section crashing, which I don't think they should have shown in the trailers whatsoever.
No, they should have not.
But when I saw that, like, my heart hurt. I was just like, oh, why? Like,
you killed it. How dare you? See, okay, yeah. How can that not make your heart stop just a little bit?
Yeah, Frozen Tom. A Tomsicle.
But what really gets me is what's going to happen in a few short seconds here. And come on, Chakotay, we know that this hurt you way further than you're letting on.
Yeah, he's like, I should have kissed her when I had the chance. Damn monkey!
He could have kissed her back to life, right there! And there she is, Captain Janeway, Ice Princess. Frozen over for real.
I did like how when they first came on, like him, he kind of like the computer's not working, so he slams it with his fist and he's like, come on, you know, that's something that we never would see Kim do.
True.
When he was younger, so we kind of established, oh, he's a different person, you know, he's kind of quick to anger, short-tempered kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I do like about this whole thing is they are very different versions of themselves 15 years removed. I would say Harry's actually better done than Chakotay. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Chakotay's pretty spot on. Like Chakotay is just Chakotay, but we see the real growth in Kim. And I think that's because he holds a lot more responsibility on his shoulders than Chakotay did, because it was
Kim's
calculations, you know?
Right. He's definitely taking this very personally, as we find out. And so I suppose that's where a lot of this anger is coming from. And the doc hasn't changed a bit.
Because he just, like, can you imagine, like, just waking up going, like, oh, holy crap.
Yeah, would you not be looking around, what happened?
Yeah, this was really crappy of Chakotay and Kim, because they started to treat him like a piece of technology again.
It's you true, know? Like, he's just a tool to them. Come on, do some work for us, let's go.
Yeah, it's just like, really, you're not going to tell me that it's, you know, like, decades have gone by and all my friends and comrades are dead? Yeah, sure, no, it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, now granted, we don't have to see all of it to fill him in, obviously, for time purposes, yeah. But come on. At least acknowledge that happened, please. And now we've cut to happier
times.
Shut up.
It's B'Elanna in slow motion. Jeez.
I'm sorry. Backing off. There you go. Glory moment. She broke the bottle of champagne. Now, I do like the look of the slipstream drive. It's not a massive change, but you can tell it's been modified.
Yeah, I do. I do like the add-ons. Like, I do like the redresses and everything like that, because that's something that they would have to do, because it's not like they could just, like, put their warp core off to the side. You know?
Yeah, no, they couldn't redo the entire section and then ignore the warp drive. Really? No.
Yeah.
I also love that they have confetti all over the place. I mean, it's all over in Janeway's hair. It's on the floor. I do feel bad for whoever has to pick that up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was like, who's going to pick that up? The junior staff or what?
Yeah, the crewman, I guess.
Yeah, the Equinox crew. Oh, wait, no, that's...
No, they're not there yet.
Yeah.
It's probably the people that we meet in Good Shepherd, who we don't know at this point.
There you go.
Yes. Now, this is a very Janeway Chakotay-centric episode. Which, and I kind of wonder why. Now, don't get me wrong, I appreciate it and I enjoy every moment of it. But wouldn't you say that fifth season's kind of fizzled out a little?
No, I wouldn't say that it's fizzled out. No? I wouldn't. I'd say they still have their dinners and their moments and that. And they still have Shatter to look forward to. They have that whole tension going on.
I suppose they also have the fight later on in this season, but
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'd actually really given up on the whole Janeway Chakotay thing by this point during first run. After Hunters in season 4 and nothing happened after that, I just thought, okay, they've dropped it. But then they keep throwing us like bones like this, and I'm just thinking, okay, stop going back and forth. Stop playing with my emotions here. Either you do it or you don't.
Yeah, they do have a lot of back and forth there. But this right here, this moment, could be one of my favorite moments in all of Voyager, and that is drunk Seven of Nine.
After one glass of champagne, no less. I love it. This is like every person's first drinking experience, right?
She's immediately drunk, and he's like, yeah, the Borg can't hold their liquor, apparently.
Apparently not. But Jeri Ryan is just, of course, knocking it out fantastically. Like, I really do believe she's drunk. It's not easy to do drunk, either,
it's like,
as far as acting
goes. We are as one.
Yes.
We are as one.
Yeah, we are as one.
I need that inscribed somewhere.
It's good to know she's a happy drunk.
Yeah, that's true. Man, can you imagine a mean drunk Seven? Jeez.
Ooh.
Everybody would be assimilated. People would be, you know, just dropping
left
and right.
It would be bad. She'd be trying to take over the ship. There'd be problems.
I do like in this episode that they make Tom the they make Tom the doubting Thomas. sorry, folks. But yeah, like I like that they did that because you know this is his wheelhouse. This is like, even though he's not an engineer, he's the person, he's the pilot, he's the one who's going to be flying this thing with the slipstream behind him, you know. And it's either with B'Elanna being gung-ho because she built the dang thing, it's cool to have Tom be on the other end of it going, this isn't gonna work.
Usually it's Harry who has that role too, but maybe Tom is having flashbacks to when he'd went to warp 10 and is thinking, not again.
Or when he tried to do that starburst maneuver back in his Academy days. Oh, wait, no, that's a different Tom Paris.
that was before the name change.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but we all know who you are.
I do love that bridge. That's a good bridge.
It's a beautiful bridge. I still think it's held up.
I think that's the thing, is that even though the TNG bridge, the Enterprise D bridge, is iconic, you know, like when you see it, you're like, bam, that's Star Trek, that's the Next Generation. This one, and you've said this many times before, but like, this could have taken place in the 80s, in the 90s, today, or 20 years from now, and it'll still look like a futuristic bridge.
Yeah, I think so. And I really need to refrain from talking smack about the Enterprise D, so I'm going to let you take care of that, because I've gotten a little bit of grief from Gilfus.
Oh, really?
One of the guys on Earl Grey. Yes, he listened to The Journey number one, and apparently, I do remember saying this, I'm taking full credit, I'm not denying it, I said in that introductory podcast of ours, who needs another TNG podcast? But you got to take it into context. Because in like 2011, 2012, every new Star Trek themed podcast was a TNG podcast, because that's what everybody wanted to review and go for. And so at the time, who needed another TNG podcast? Well, then we got Earl Grey. And all those podcasts that tried to do their thing earlier, most of them have gone away. We've got Earl Grey, and that's all we need.
Yeah, most of them have fallen off the map or pod faded. So, yeah, and
yeah,
you cannot deny the awesomeness that is Earl Grey. Commenting on the scene, though, I do love that they're having this discussion in engineering, not in the conference room or anything like that, because this is in the, you know, this is the scene of the crime. This is the thing that could potentially send them home or fail them. And there's confetti and streamers everywhere.
Yes.
And Tom is just bringing the party down.
Yeah, the party is sort of over. It is nice that they are doing this here rather than the conference room. Also, just for a refreshing view. Because how many times do we have staff meetings?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that, because you get to do a lot of different angles with this one. You get to follow Harry around with a steady cam.
And it's
and
good
stuff. You don't normally see stuff like that in the conference room.
Very, very true. So, good choice. I don't know who did it. The writers, LeVar Burton. Whoever needs to take credit should take credit.
Let's give Burton credit, just because. Because
he's a man.
He's the man.
He is the man. Yes.
No offense, Captain. See, this is the thing, folks, is that, like, in TV, like, this is a genius shot right now. This is utilizing depth of the 4x3.
Totally.
Of space, because we've talked about it before, about how, like, people feel like the only way that you can get proper depth is with widescreen. No, you just need somebody who knows how to use the lens and knows how to use the aspect ratio. And Burton definitely knows how to do that, or at least his DP does. Mm-hmm. But like in that shot, like Harry and Janeway were looking at each other, and in order to fit them into a 4x3 frame, if this was real life, it would look like they were just about to kiss.
Like Janeway and Chakotay should be doing right now in this scene.
So, okay, what is that? You're a drinker. What's that thing called when you pour wine in another glass before you pour it into a smaller glass?
You know, I drink, but I don't drink wine, and I have no idea. I'm totally ignorant of wine, unfortunately. I kind of have always wanted to get into it, but I just never have. I'm more of a hard liquor person, and so if we want to talk vodka, shot glasses, that's what those are. I know what those are.
That's what those are. Okay, yeah.
But as far as what's in here, I mean, it might as well be water to me. It's clear. I don't know. Now, if you ask Kate Mulgrew, she would be able to tell you. She is an aficionado on wine.
I don't know how to put this. When I was younger, I was always I would watch movies with my dad constantly, and so the women he liked in film. Mm-hmm. I liked, and so I was always kind of attracted to older women when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And right now, Janeway's she's good in season 5. Look at that,
and she is in a mood too. I mean, look at her, this little action that's going with the hand,
and just like the eyes,
the dead stare into Chakotay's soul here. Yeah,
you don't know if she's gonna stab him or smooch him.
Well, of course she's gonna smooch him, of course, after dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Oh, here she goes. Speaking of risks.
Yeah.
She comes in close and touches him.
How can you deny?
Oh, and she gently touches his neck. Come on, folks. Come on.
That warms my heart so much. And then this scene, this glimpse here of the pad, the frozen over pad, chills me every time.
What would have been hysterical is that, like, for those of you just listening, we see a pad on the desk, and then it crossfades to a frozen pad on the floor. Wouldn't it be hysterical if it was still on the desk? Like, that was the one thing that didn't fall during the crash.
I think that's sort of what they were implying. I mean, it's been there all that time. I mean, not to say maybe it didn't move during the crash, but it's certainly been well-preserved. That whole thing gives me a lot of chills. Because we've built up the excitement again. Okay, they're going to risk it. They're going to go on that flight. And Janeway and Chakotay are going to have dessert together. And then we know what happens 15 years later, and it's still there. It haunts me, man. That visual really grabs me. I don't know why. It's just a stupid little pad.
They didn't really do too much to them makeup-wise, other than just hair. Like, they just grayed their hair.
I mean, it's still very much Garrett Wong's face. He doesn't have extra lines or anything like that. They didn't bother with the latex, I guess.
Yeah, I think they might have done a little bit of makeup under his eyes, but that's about it. But yeah, like, I mean, it's 21st century medicine. I mean, people age better.
They have really powerful vitamins and supplements. Keep them in good health for a long time.
So right now, Kim is talking to the doctor and saying that the slipstream didn't work.
Arnold, how you been?
The science was not sciencey enough.
He didn't science very well.
He did not science very well.
Yes.
Exposition.
It's nice to always see Arnold come by and visit us for
commentary. Drops in from time to time. Yeah.
He's always welcome on the show.
See, what's funny is that in season 5, this is probably what Robert Beltran's hair really looked like if he didn't tie it.
That's so funny that I was going to mention that. You are reading my mind right now. That's kind of scary. But you're right. It probably, yes, looked exactly like this. So did they just strip the hair dye or what?
Yeah. See, I wanted to see more from the doc when he saw Seven pulled out like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there should be much more emotion involved in that, too.
Or maybe this is just his medical training gearing in, you know?
I don't know. Maybe that's the one big failing that this episode has, is despite the emotional pull that it does have, the characters are not helping us feel the depth of it.
Yeah, I feel like they had to pack in so much into this episode that they didn't feel like they had the time to mm-hmm. show them basically break down or like mourn their comrades, because Chakotay and Harry, they've already mourned their comrades over the past 15 years, but I wanted to see something a bit more from the doc.
Yeah, we should have seen something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now I got a question for you. What do you think about Tessa here as the third wheel in this mission?
Well, I feel like it's hard to run the Delta Flyer with two, and I feel like they needed a link to the new time, and Tessa was good as any. I mean, I feel like she's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for, interchangeable. I mean, there's nothing yeah. really special about her. I think she's just a vehicle. Like, it could have been anybody.
Yeah, she's a pretty cardboard character. Not a whole lot to her. She doesn't have to serve that much of a purpose, I suppose. But like you yeah. said, when you have to cram in so much, she seems like something you could cut out. And then we could cut out this awful line of they're having sex.
Yeah, that was so wooden, the way that Harry gave it. Like, they're okay. having sex.
Obviously, Harry's still not doing well in the relationship department, because if that's how he wants to describe people in a relationship, they're having sex. Then yeah. clearly he's not. And
it's
he's jealous.
Really weird. He's pretty rude. Like, and Tessa's just like, oh, Harry.
It doesn't faze her. She's used to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't even find the relationship that believable. There's not enough time to really yeah. get much of a sense of it.
It's more of a statement of fact than something that we need to go along with, you know?
Good for Chakotay. He moved on a little bit and managed to have relationships with people not 15 years ago. But, whatever. You know, I kind of want one of these jackets. The more I look at them, the more handy these would be.
In Fargo, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like it when Chakotay had it open up a little bit. When they were in the Delta, well, is it the Delta Flyer? When they're in the shuttle, and it's opened up a little bit and sprawled out a little bit. Looks really nice. Certainly on Robert Beltran. I don't know if it would look as good on me, but I would like to try.
So how, I wonder what's the age difference between the two of them, though?
Too much.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think he's old enough to be her father, and therefore, by my standards, that's too much.
Age ain't nothing but a number.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just maybe that's my own preference. I would not get into a relationship with somebody whom I could either be the mother or daughter of. That's just me.
Yeah.
It would just, I think, be too much. You're in a completely different place in life. But maybe when you live a longer life, as you do in the 24th century, that means less.
That's true. That's true. I mean, we did talk about that a little bit ago, about like how Picard is actually 10 years older than Patrick Stewart.
Right.
And I read a Deep Space Nine novel where the new XO was 100 years old and looked like he was 70 or something mm-hmm. like that. Like a right. good 70.
He left his quarters a mess. Yeah. Doesn't really matter now.
Yeah, it is kind of weird that Tessa would go along with this. Like, she's willing to go and erase the past 15 years, and that she's going to severely alter her life, especially the life that she had with Chakotay. Like, if they are a couple, that's kind of a weird thing to agree to.
It right? kind of is, right? I mean, essentially, if this plan is successful, she's not going to remember anything about anything that has happened in these 15 yeah. years. She will be none the wiser, which I guess maybe, I don't know, maybe you could have a little bit of peace with that. Like, you're not even going to be aware. But yeah. that's a really big sacrifice to make. I mean, I guess she really loves him that much. But again, we just don't have enough to really believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I know that they're trying right here. They're discussing this whole thing. And I'm still not buying it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, see, if we took the time to have this moment, we could have had the time to show the Doctor react to Seven's death and have the moment where they, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's he talking to? what's going on?
Yes, yes. Foreshadowing. Now, that's not a disturbing visual at all.
It's seven skull.
Yeah, oh. No big deal. We just take those out and examine them every day.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about this story, I guess, is that it is very mechanical. We just have to keep going from point to point to point to point and not really absorb it all. We just have to go.
Yeah, and also I forgot how much talking, just straight talking, is in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Not
a lot, like, when we're actually in the future, not a lot actually happens. It's just them going to a location and having a conversation.
Right. Now, I don't know. When we did Macrocosm for the Ready Room, Brannon Braga said in an interview about that episode about how Star Trek likes to talk too much. Do you think that's true? I mean, do you like scenes like this where they're just talking?
I love scenes with just talking. I mean, like, I'm a Tarantino fan for the most part, and a lot of the best moments of his movies are just talking. And so I'm also a Richard Linklater fan, and most of his movies are just talking. So, like, if you have a well-scripted conversation, it can be entertaining. Mm-hmm. And in Star Trek specifically, you can have great scenes where it's just talking. You can have great speeches, and you can have great debates. But when it's just straight up exposition every single time, which happens a lot in Star Trek, that's when it's too much.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's entirely dependent on what it is you're trying to do with the conversation. It's great for character development. It's not necessarily good for keeping the story moving necessarily. A lot of times you just need to show and not tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on occasion, maybe Star Trek does get a little too talky, but at the same time, it's also a very necessary thing.
Yes, I agree. And also, when you look at the economics of television, especially in the 90s, when special effects were so much harder to do and so much more expensive, mm-hmm. that you had to save your special effects shots for when you really needed them. So they're like, okay, well, instead of showing this battle, we're just going to have them talk about it. And you're like, sometimes that needed to happen.
Yeah, sometimes that really massively fails. Like, the first thing that came to my mind was the 37s. You know, where they're talking about all those glorious cities and how wonderful they were.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We didn't even get a matte painting.
Not even a matte painting. Yeah.
They couldn't even afford that because they spent all their money on landing the ship.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Now, granted, that was worth it. But if that were being produced today, you know that wouldn't fly.
That would
the
not
pun.
Fly whatsoever, yeah.
Yeah, they would have to do something. Just, I think the audience now demands that sort of thing, that quality.
And also, like, when you look at shows like Fringe, or I think it was called Almost Human, like, you look at how many special effects are almost in every single shot.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they walk outside, or whenever they, yeah, like, whenever they do something, any kind of sci-fi-ish something, it's massive CGI in every single shot. And that's hard to do on a TV show budget. And
yeah.
I can only imagine that if we get a new Star Trek show in the next couple of years, or even the next 5 or 10 years, it's going to look more like Almost Human and Fringe than it would Voyager or Enterprise.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The audience would require it.
Yeah.
Because we've been spoiled by the heavy CGI that's in movies especially now, but including TV as well. I mean, it's such a commonplace thing. To not have it would practically be a crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
And once again, we forget that Chakotay's a vegetarian.
Well, I mean, like, Kim's the one that said salami sandwiches, so maybe he has a, maybe it's tofu salami. We don't know.
Yeah, I guess we've had that debate before, right, about whether replicated meat is actually meat.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah, no, actually, I don't know. I can't remember talking about, but that's
okay,
such a good...
Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe it was another podcast. Maybe it was the Ready Room. I'm not sure. But somewhere down the line, I've had a conversation with somebody about that, and to no real avail. Oh, and you know what? The Galaxy Class is so pretty on Voyager because we just haven't seen it.
Now, it feels so out of place, right?
It does. Wait a minute.
Yeah, they have this good back and forth where, like, in present day, You have Voyager following the Delta Flyer, and in the future you have a Galaxy-class starship following the Delta Flyer. And it was just so cool to see that back and forth. And the Galaxy-class starship is just home for me. So, okay, this is really important. So we see Burton. He makes an appearance as Geordi. He doesn't have his visor. Now, he has the First Contact uniform, but he has a new communicator. He has a new comm badge on his, and it's the futuristic one that we've seen before. We've seen this comm badge several times before, but never mixed with this uniform. So this, in 15 years, that must be the bridge. Now, but the thing is, we've seen iterations that are supposed to be in this timeline where it's that weird All Good Things jumpsuit with the All Good Things comm badge. But I like that they're, like, because these are all alternate universes, so you never know how it's really going to go. And I prefer this a whole lot more than the All Good Things costume.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I love the First Contact uniforms, and they might very well be my favorite of all the uniform iterations. The All Good Things uniforms are okay, but they've still got that really tight jumpsuit quality to them, and this just feels like, that just seems a lot more comfortable, although it might be a little warm. Because again, how many layers are on that thing?
Well, you have the, depending on which one, like you have a tank top, an undershirt, and then a vest, and then a coat.
so. Yeah, wow. Okay, they must run these ships pretty cold.
Right?
Yeah, because I mean, even the Voyager jumpsuit.
Yeah,
it has,
I like
several layers.
I mean, I didn't like the Voyager jumpsuit until Voyager. Like when I saw it on Deep Space Nine, I was like, eh. But for some reason, seeing it on Voyager, it clicked it with me.
Oh, really? See, I liked them on DS9. I thought it gave it a distinctness, like, ooh, this is a station, and that's what they wear on a station.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided to put them all over Starfleet. And I didn't mind, I just thought, oh, okay.
How weird would that be, like, if we saw the Voyager crew in the TNG jumpsuits? That would have been interesting to see.
Wow, that would be different. I'm having a hard time visualizing, like, Captain Janeway in the skin-tight uniform like that. Like, I don't think it would do anybody any favors, quite honestly.
So I never get tired of any kind of wormhole effect in
I like
Star
this
Trek.
One.
And I think Voyager does it the most. I swear Voyager has to do it the most, even more so than Deep Space Nine, which is weird if you think about that.
Yeah, totally. Since they have a wormhole, there's your wormhole right there.
So we have a lot of sciencing going on, a lot of technobabble.
Yeah, science, 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 science.
A lot of phase corrections and gamma tables and variances decreasing. Yeah,
we don't have to understand any of it.
I love it in Futurama, which I know you don't watch it, but
no,
like they're on the ship and the professor's there and they're like, do something, professor. And he's like, I'm sciencing as fast as I can.
That's kind of what Harry's doing right now.
Every time I see this episode, that's what I think of. I think about the professor just going, oh, no.
This is very true. It's just about that time. I mean, the bridge is shaking. Janeway's yelling. Tom is saying, I can't.
Now, I just now remembered that I forgot that they failed again. And
yes, they did.
That, like, we actually see them fail and then they have a second shot. Like, actually, not a second shot, a third shot. I forgot about that until just now.
That's true. I actually like this part of the story where we don't see this happen first. You know what I mean? Where, like, if they would have kicked off the show with this, that would have been great, but I think it would have really destroyed the storytelling. I mean, the structure really works this way.
I agree. I love the structure of this episode. I think it absolutely works, and I love getting thrown in the middle of something, and that's what happened at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying, is I like the fact that they just throw us in, and then we find out everything that happens as we go along.
It's so creepy that you can communicate with Seven just on a whim. Like, the Borg Queen can do it. Harry can do it. The Doc can do it now. And it's just like...
Does she like not she has, have a firewall up? I mean, really.
I know, right? A do not disturb button, you know?
Yeah, she can't block people. I mean, man. There were some things we really just didn't predict for the 24th century.
Here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
This is such an insane special effect, and I know we don't like to focus too much on the visuals when we're doing a commentary, but guys, if you haven't seen this episode in a long time and you're not watching it right now, take the time and go and watch Voyager crashing onto the ice planet. I mean, it is something for the ages.
It really is. I mean, back then, it was absolute cutting edge. And I would just love to know like how much time and just blood, sweat, and tears went into this back then among the special effects guys. Because it had to have been so much work. So much work to make it look this good.
Yeah, I do love that Chakotay was so resolved. Like when Harry's like, we have to go back. And Chakotay's like, sorry, it's not an option. Like, I love those people too, but I'm not going to kill myself to do it.
Right. Chakotay can be really good under pressure. He already knows it's too late. So good for him on that front where, okay, being emotionless is good on that front. So apparently Class L, you don't want to live there.
Is Hoth. Apparently Hoth is a Class L planet. Oh, wrong franchise. Sorry, guys.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and that first impact when it just slams down.
Oh, scraping the bottom, and the thruster comes tearing apart.
Yeah, the nacelle goes ripped off. Like, I kind of wish that we saw that first, like, we were inside the bridge during that first impact where we saw them.
Oh,
just,
man,
like,
could you imagine everybody just flying in the air?
Yeah, kind of like in, this is like the fourth time I've mentioned Generations, but kind of like in Generations.
Hey, you know, I'm right there with you because I'm thinking, which crash was better, Generations or Timeless?
Well, I think Generations had more emotional impact. Because we got to hang on it longer. Like, the sheer crash took a whole lot longer than what we just saw. And so, and also it was like movie scale effects. And so I'd have to say Generations, but this is a very close second.
Okay. Truth. It's also hard to compete with the iconic Enterprise D.
Yeah. And especially the saucer of the Enterprise D.
Yes. So, okay. You get this one. TNG. Yeah.
You get this one, TNG.
But that was still pretty freaking sweet. Oh, man.
Yeah. Hey, you're the one who asked the question. You're the one who decided to compare them. I was going to step away from it. But no.
I don't think I'll get any flack from the Earl Grey guys on that one just because I said TNG wins.
Yeah.
It's all good. Angry Harry is angry.
Okay, so I want to talk about Seven's skull real quick. So we saw the skull, and it looked like it was made from copper.
Okay.
So it does not look like bone. It does not look like a skull. It looks like a copper skull, something that you would make. And so what's the deal? So, like, does that happen during the whole assimilation process? Like, where it's like Wolverine, where metal's grafted onto your bones? Like, what's the deal?
You know, they've never really explained that part of the assimilation. But I would have to say yes, just to take a guess.
Well, at least with Seven. I mean, we've seen Borg skeletons before where they just look like skeletons. So I guess everybody's different.
Yeah, but then, like, when the Borg Queen got incinerated by the fluid and engineering in First Contact, what's left of her skull is all metal.
Oh, that's true. That's
so true. So, kind of walking a fine line there. Maybe is metallicized, but the rest is not.
I don't know. We'll have to go back and see.
Pure speculation.
I do like the Doc as the voice of reason in this scene where, like, Kim starts to lose. He's like, I killed him again. He's like, control yourself.
Yeah. Yes, because he is losing it. I mean, Kim can't at this point see any options whatsoever. And now, there is an alternative. Hooray.
Because seriously, like, if it wasn't for the Doc, everybody would still be dead.
Right. So that is the high point for the Doctor in this episode. Yeah. This is how he contributes. And it's a very good contribution. In those 5 seconds.
Yeah, Kim made it happen, but the Doc is the one who gave him the inspiration and the idea.
Correct.
So was this ship called the Challenger? Is that what it was?
Geordi's ship? Yes.
Yeah, the Challenger. Okay.
Yeah, that's a nice little tribute. I appreciate
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I have to think that was LeVar Burton's idea. It's just something he would do. That sounds like him. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we can give him credit for the angle, but I don't know, or like shooting in the engineering. But I think we have to give credit to the challenger, to the writer.
I don't know, man. My money is on Burton.
Well, we'll ask him.
We ought to ask him on Twitter.
That's true. I mean, he might actually answer.
We might. Worst he can do is ignore.
I do. I feel like a lot of the.
Hang on, one thing here. I love this part. This is Garrett Wong's best acting in the whole series. Right there.
That was pretty cool and pretty good timing. Yeah, when he goes, he's like, he just slams his fists down and goes, yes, and then explodes.
Yes. That's awesome. Okay, and I'm sorry. You were saying.
Oh, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. I was saying that like a lot of the starship names are very North American-centric.
Oh, yes. Very much.
Very much. Like with our history and our backdrop. And I think it's always refreshing when I hear a name like the Soyuz, I think is what whenever you hear a Native American name, or I think there are some other, I'm blanking, I'm bad podcasting, but
oh, there's a lot of them though. You're right. They're out there.
There's a lot of ships out there that aren't like, that have like, are an African name or a French name or something like that.
There should definitely be more, and there should be non-Earth names as well, because Starfleet isn't just Earth.
Yes. I think there has been some Vulcan-esque names. I think there might have been one, but I'm reaching for that one.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of them, but aren't they all Vulcan ships too at that? Maybe. I might be making that
up. No, there's one ship, which I cannot believe that this is possible, but in Deep Space Nine, there's one Starfleet ship that has an all-Vulcan crew. That's the most racist or specious thing, or whatever you want to call it, thing I've ever heard happening in Starfleet.
Yeah, that just doesn't seem right, does it?
There's no way that would happen in the established canon of Starfleet, but whatever. It made an interesting point in Deep Space Nine.
Well, it set up the plot so that they could play baseball.
There you go. That's it. I was
That's
say,
the purpose it served. That's what it needed to do.
Yeah. Nobody works with the lights on in when it's nighttime in the mess hall. Nobody works with the lights on. Like, it's space. You can have lights on whenever you want.
Well, also, do you not get enough darkness surrounding you when you're in space?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would want some light myself.
It's definitely the benefit for the audience, saying like, hey, it's late at night, he's burning the midnight oil.
Yeah, it's true. It's after hours. Obviously, he's the only one there. Yeah. Okay, we get it. Fine.
What? She's not Riker. Why is she sitting on it backwards?
Did she raise her leg? I didn't quite see.
Oh, man, I missed it. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Janeway doing the Riker maneuver. That just blew my mind.
Okay, Harry has to deal with a lot of duplicates. He's died a couple of times. he's been a couple of different universes. And now he gets a message from 15 years from now, Harry. Jeez.
And this Harry no longer exists, mm-hmm. technically, sort of. I like what Janeway says about paradoxes. Just don't try to understand them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she does it in that Kimmel Groove voice. She's like, don't even try.
Yeah, don't even try.
There you go.
And of course she's doing it. She's kind of like in this nice little pose. Her head's resting on her hand. Very relaxed, comfortable.
I'm surprised they didn't call this episode Time's Up.
Had they not done it in Year of Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, and you stole my line.
Well, I only say it hoping that you would do it.
But then I can't do it right after you do it.
Well, I'm sure the audience wouldn't care.
Mm. No.
Okay.
Poor Harry. He just looks so confused.
And also still an ensign. I just...
He came through. And I mean, come on. What more does the guy have to do? He built Astromedrics. He's been, at this point, a pretty decent ensign. I mean, he started off a little rough around the edges, but he's had a very commendable career. He just can't do it.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
It even became a joke within the show.
Yes, it did. When Tom got re-promoted. Like, yeah. Really? Really?
And also when they made contact back home and his mom even said something.
I'm going to call this Captain Janeway and tell her.
It's like, Mom, no, don't do that.
Yeah, please no, Mom, please.
All right, well, that's the episode. That's
all
the
right.
Show.
That is Timeless. Time's up.
Yeah.
With Timeless. God, there you go. Okay, well, Timeless isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
But instead of it being a human being prejudiced against Vulcans because the Romulans look like Vulcans, the Vulcans are taking advantage of themselves looking like Romulans in order to be racist against Romulans.
Earl Grey.
So he's got the two armrests, and the right one says little, you know, Ensign, you know, Lamont, and the little arrow. And then the one on the left says Lieutenant Commander Data. Like a little arrow. Yeah.
The orb.
But when they pull away from that window with Jake and Kira, and they pull away from the station, it's like they're closing the book. They're actually closing the back cover of the book, and it's the end of the story.
To the journey!
How do you feel, Char, about the Borg Queen?
Oh boy. I think the longer that I have watched Star Trek, the more I'm in the camp of, I don't know if I like her.
The Ready Room.
They want you to come across on Archer's side where he can be mad at Trip. But I have a really hard time being Archer being mad at Trip, because just think of if we still treated, you know, people of a different race like this.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
That can honestly be the reason they brought Wesley, because Wesley's got nothing else going for him there. I mean, yes, he can lead those kids, but that's just going to be by virtue of his age. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, he's 15 years old. Of course, all the other kids are going to look up to him, at least for a while. Then if he ends up being a total tool, then they won't.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Yeah, Learning Curve was never meant to be a season one finale. They were going to do the 37s, and then UPN wanted to open season two with it, and that totally didn't work either.
Man, you gotta say UPN really ooped it up.
Literary Treks.
What Jerry Taylor talks about with Catherine Janeway's life is it's kind of a series of her relationships. I mean, she should be doing all sorts of fantastic things, right? And instead, we're learning about her boyfriends.
Melodic Treks.
But there's a whole host of people that appear in Star Trek. As I said, most of it is classical, so it's Verdi, Vivaldi, Strauss, Troitschka, Harry Kim.
The 602 Club.
This really does have an impact on, I think, the entire, you know, comic book world. Dark Knight Returns still have a huge impact in the way that people view Batman today.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We've got tons of Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week. None of them would be possible without the help of our sponsors, so let's hear quickly about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Also, there are plenty of awesome ways that you can help us out on the show. The first thing you could do is write us an iTunes review, because that helps us out with the iTunes search rankings, helps other people find the show, and guess what? We have an iTunes review. We have somebody to thank. So, many thanks to, and I love this username, Skiddly Poo, for rating us 5 stars and writing a short review, singing our praises. You rock. And if you out there haven't written us a review on iTunes, we would massively appreciate it. And if you write a review outside of the US iTunes store, we would appreciate you letting us know that. We are both on Twitter, Tristan. Why don't we tell people where they can find us?
You can find me at The Insane Robin.
And I am Oh The Profanity. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/trekfm and becoming a monthly subscriber. You get different perks based on your level of contribution, and we want to thank those of you who have already done that and become subscribers and help the network. People like Lisa Stevens, who is now an associate producer of TTJ.
That's right. Go Lisa Stevens.
Yeah, woo-woo. We appreciate everything that she has done to support the network, and you can follow her on Twitter. Her handle is flip18, so give her a follow and tell her how much she's awesome. So another order of business. Before we go, we still have the poll going for the TTJ 99 episode title, where we wanted to know which episode title you would give to the episode, the script, whatever you want to call it, that we made up in TTJ 99. Now, my choice was Dissonance.
And my choice was Decisions, but you could also write in your own.
Right, and we've already gotten a few votes as of the time we're recording this now. So we will give you a few more days to vote, and then the next time Tristan and I get together to record, we will announce the results on the next show, which will be about what?
What we're talking about next week is we're doing another season-based top five listing, and I know what you're thinking. Tristan, Char, what are you doing? You've already done the best episodes of seasons 1-7. What we're doing is we're bringing that back, but doing our top five moments from each season. And so next week, we're doing the top five moments from season 1.
That's right. And so you have to wait a week to tune into that, though. So until then, this has been To the Journey. To the Journey!
Hi, Philip Gilfus here on behalf of Earl Grey, Trek.fm's dedicated TNG show. We are focusing our Midas Array to the Delta Quadrant to send this message. I'm joined by my co-host, Assistant to the Chief Engineer, Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I'm sad to hear you'll be taking a leave of absence from the Enterprise to join Mr. Barkley on some, let me see what this pad says here, on some weird project. What's it called? Road Searcher? Street Looker? What's the name of it?
Oh, it's Project Empathy Goddess. I don't know what it means. Listen, I'm just an assistant to the chief engineer. I just do what I'm told. Barkley is like, hey, go here and do this. And whatever it means, whatever. I don't know. But I would like to find, Voyager at some point, I hope.
Okay. Well, I also have been getting some weird reports about where you've been sleeping, but we're going to leave that alone for a moment. I'm also joined by the ship's diplomatic officer, Mr. Darren Moser. Now, Darren, I know you've been talking with some of the representatives of the Ferengi Alliance. They seem to be still quite upset about those two Ferengi that got lost in the bars and wormhole. Any idea what ever happened to them?
Yes, they actually are starting their own podcasting network. They've picked up Breakfast with Neelix as their opening show, and their latest hit is called It's All for Profit, where they just talk about money and why the Federation just needs to bring this time-honored tradition back.
Awesome. That's great. Well, all of us here at Earl Grey want to send our well wishes to Charlene and Tristan on the special anniversary.
Congratulations on 100 episodes about Voyager. Thanks for all of your great shows, and here's to many more.
Congratulations, Char and Tristan. You guys inspire us here at Earl Grey, and you make Trek FM a better place to be.
So here's to many more episodes as y'all continue to the journey!
To the journey!